Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the Milkpacking District, in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Unrest continues in Cairo. Investigators resume their search for Kyron Harmon, and a rancher is killed by a cow.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, prepare to embrace Legion of News!
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Monday, January 31st, 2011. Hundreds of activists showed up at Rancho Mirage, California on Sunday to protest the political activities of conservative billionaires Charles and David Koch, according to the Los Angeles Times. Protesters convened outside a resort where the libertarian Koch brothers were meeting in closed-door sessions with donors, strategists, and politicians, including House Republican leader Eric Cantor of Virginia.
Now, what's the point of being a billionaire if grubby people can just show up outside your joint and just be making a wreck of the whole place?
But that's the thing, they can't. That's the
really?
Beauty of America. We have we have police that will come and remove people.
They're being broomed away?
Yes.
Excellent.
The brothers run the chemical corporate behemoth Koch Industries.
Are you sure you're pronouncing that correctly?
Behemoth?
No.
Or Koch?
Yeah.
Koch. I hope so. Have been criticized in the past for quietly funding the Tea Party and limited government anti-environment initiatives, or waging a covert war against Obama, as The New Yorker says.
I don't think they understand what war means, but that's okay.
Yeah. While protesters faced off against helmeted police officers circling the resort, a Koch spokeswoman defended the meeting. She said, it brings together some of America's greatest philanthropists and job creators who share a common belief that the current level of government spending in our nation is simply unsustainable.
No, but seriously, folks, thanks for coming out tonight.
Yeah. Okay. This is the eighth such meeting convened by the Koch brothers. And although the guest list is kept secret, past attendees have included Glenn Beck and prominent GOP figures.
I'm almost certain you're mispronouncing Koch, if that's the case. Thank you for joining us. It is Legion of News. It is Monday, January 31st, 2011. I'm Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor. Coming up later on this hour, we got your entertainment news, also your science on the march, and so forth. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes, as well as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. It's also available via your mobile device. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
I'm all distractified today because you don't have your glasses on.
It's a whole thing. It's a whole thing. I don't have time to get into it now.
You're so lovely without your glasses, Mr. Emerson.
What are you trying to say?
You should take your hair down and, like...
I was going to say, then we're going to do a little training montage with Rodney Dangerfield. Jason, I want to graduate! Is there a... I don't... Wait, here's the thing. Unlike we normally say this and then I disregard it. I'm not going to get distracted this hour because I'm going to get all sidetracked if I start talking about why I don't have my glasses on. So it's not that interesting a story, but that's never been an impediment for me taking like an hour to tell it. So I will we'll discuss it next hour. Till then, try not to be distracted by my dazzling blue peepers.
Okay. The search for missing boy Kyron Horman resumed Sunday as crews searched two rural Portland roads in the West Hills. Up to 50 rescue workers and a handful of search and cadaver dogs worked until dusk, focusing on 11 areas in the area of Northwest Skyline Road near Rocky Point Road, plus a gravel road in the Dixie Mountain area.
What are they rescuing? Do they think he's been clutching onto a branch off the side of a cliff this whole time?
I really don't know. There's this one volunteer that's quoted here who says, "We really want to find Kyron and bring him home. I think about him all the time."
Okay. It makes me sound like a jerk to snark about that, but really, it seems like you need a broader spectrum of interests.
Also, if you do find him, I think the idea that you're looking with cadaver dogs might be an indication that what you find isn't going to be pretty.
Hey, by the way, I found out that I'm not going to be able to start a band called Cadaver Dog because it's already been done.
Oh.
It's taken. There's like some Irish punk band somewhere called Cadaver Dog.
Good for them.
Next time.
The sheriff's office said that the search had been planned for months, but the winter weather postponed their efforts. Dog handlers said cold weather wasn't ideal for the dogs, who are trained to detect human remains. These cases are really difficult, said Marty Neiman, who searched with his dog Justice. When it's a child and you haven't found that child, you have a sense of failure. Kyron has been missing since June 4th.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Monday, January 31st. And still to come this hour, we got your science in the march. Also, entertainment news and other things of that nature.
Yes.
I have nowhere to go. That was just a little bit of buffer talk right there.
Okay.
It is pointless, really.
It did a fine job of buffering, though.
It allowed you to transition from one story to another smoothly, Don.
Thank you. In the latest Egypt-inspired protests, dozens of people were arrested and one student was killed yesterday during mass anti-government demonstrations in Sudan. Hundreds of students took to the streets of Khartoum on Sunday, and hundreds more gathered in cities of El Obeid and Kassala, calling for the ouster of President Omar Hassan al-Bashir.
Was it covered on the Khartoum network? yeah.
To stop the demonstrators, Reuters said the police swarmed the campuses of at least six universities, beating students and tear-gassing dormitories. One student, Mohammed Abdulrahman, was killed during a clash with police. About 70 students were arrested, although many were later released. Since the mass protests began in Tunisia, two Sudan-based groups calling themselves Youth for Change and The Spark have gained popularity on social networking sites and led the charge for a similar national uprising.
Did they do like a little synchronized dance thing and then tell you not to smoke? Hi, we're the Spark, kids. And then like a little thing started. And then they did like a little, they all did the splits and then formed a human pyramid and said, here's Jimmy, he has no jaw.
And then they realized nobody smokes because they're all Muslim, so they had to like find some other cause.
Also, it's hard to smoke if you've been beheaded for being a homosexual.
That too. The weekend protests complicate what is already a fraught political situation for the Sudanese government. On Sunday, a referendum revealed that 99% of southern Sudan was in favor of seceding from the north. Meanwhile, elsewhere in Egypt, Egypt entered its seventh day of protests, and President Hosni Mubarak swore in a new cabinet today in a bid to quell anti-government opposition. Of course, he also said that, he himself is not stepping down.
No, of course not.
But I got a bunch of new guys around me.
But honestly, let's just be honest. If you're this guy, and he's clearly a cretin, but it's like if you're starting from that position, if you're starting from the belief that he is a horrible person who is, just so crooked they got to screw his pants on every morning, and he's basically like shot and gouged his way to the top, what is his motivation to quit? Really? I mean, it's like he's already got like a 0% approval rating, and if they catch him, they're clearly just going to give him one of those Kochescu deals where they just string him up in front of the Capitol. So,
Now, Rick, he has been democratically elected for the last 30 years.
By the way, here's the funny thing about that, and it's sort of funny, ha-ha, and then also funny, like, ow, quit hitting me, in that there are Democratic elections. He's always, though, the only candidate.
Yeah, because if people oppose him, they just kind of end up dead.
I think that's a thing where it's like, you thought you saw Johnny the Knuckles torching the place, but then later, no, your memory indistinct.
You say, I'm not going to vote for Mubarak. I'm going to vote for the other guy. Oh, what, he's dead? Oh,
damn.
Okay, well, I guess I'll vote for him.
I could be mistaken. I didn't see nothing.
Mubarak kept his defense minister, Field Marshal Hussein Tantawi, and Foreign Minister Ahmed Abul Gait.
It's like the names are just designed to inspire horrible comments from me.
And in office, and installed archaeologist Zahi Hawass and literary figure Gaber Asfour to culture posts. But with protesters defying curfew and a million-person mega-protest scheduled to take place in Cairo tomorrow.
What kind of a protest, Dawn?
A mega-protest.
All right, thank you.
Mega-protest. And then that will be fighting Gatoroid later in the week.
Awesome.
The new cabinet is unlikely to make much of a difference, according to the AP. After mysteriously disappearing over the weekend, police returned to the streets of Cairo on Monday, where some locals greeted them like long-lost friends. What was interesting about that I liked is they got rid of the cops. They took all the cops off the street and sent in the military. And most people were actually happy to see the military come because they would rather be oppressed by the military than by the local cops, who they hate.
That's interesting, that if you're going to get a pummeling, you choose who it's from.
Right.
You know, like, I'd rather have that guy beat me than you.
They actually trust the military more than they trust their own police.
Also, I mean, I'm not saying the military can't bring the smackdown if they need to. But in a sense, don't you feel like you'd rather have a tank on the street than cops? Because a tank, I mean, let's be honest, a tank's got a big gun. But you know what? If you just kind of keep walking in a circle, what's it going to do?
You can run away from a tank.
You know, a guy with a nightstick, it seems like that's a lot harder to evade.
And the correspondents speculate that police either joined the protests or left the streets to let Egyptians know, quote, what anarchy feels like.
It does seem like a place where there's not a lot of there's not going to be a lot of shopping there for a while because everything's sort of been broken or burned.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. Business is at a standstill. Economists are saying that Egypt faces an imminent shortage of fuel, water, and food.
That's great.
Investors are saying that if the unrest spreads to other parts of the Middle East,
spreads to the rest of the Middle East,
guess what? It'll drive up
the price of does it rhyme with everything?
Oil,
yeah,
of course.
There you go. That's awesome.
Because everything drives up the price of oil. Wait, something's happening. Oh, oil's going up.
And also, incidentally, I got two things. We already send Egypt, I don't know, we send them like $1 jillion a year in aid anyway. You put some of that aside, huh? Bury it in a coffee can or something out back. We send Egypt more money than any country except for Israel. Israel is the only country that receives more foreign aid from us. So it does seem like, there's that, Susie Orman would say, maybe 2 months living expenses. Maybe you can't do all six. Maybe just put a little something in the bank for a rainy day or a day filled with fire and beatings and uprisings and the coup.
Well, Hillary Clinton did ask them nicely to stop being so violent.
Don't, what do you have to call shooting? The long-range pistol whipping. Please stop that. And secondly, what was the second thing? Second. Oh, hey, so I saw this is related to this. I saw a thing on the television on I guess it was like Thursday or Friday, doing a whole rollout about that Chevy the Chevy Volt thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I gotta say, first of all, it's a decent looking car. Looks like an actual real car, unlike that Insight crap that they tried to. And even the Prius, which I find just to be an ugly automobile. That's a thing where it's like you can really only buy it if you're blinded by your own smugness, and to the extent that like your ocular processing no longer works. The Chevy Volt actually looks like a decent car, and there's the thing of it goes like, I think they said that over time, average city and highway driving, you will be using 90% of the mileage you will drive will come from electricity, and 10% of it will come from oil or gas or whatever. And I know that the batteries are ultimately bad for the environment, and they kill fuzzy things or whatever, but I don't care. If we can just quit sending more of our money to terrorists, I'm all for that. If we can just, the less money I have to give to some religious nutcase somewhere, that makes Jack a happy guy. So I'm all for that. Because then we can just tell these, because that's to be the great thing about getting off the oil teat, is because then we can just say, hey, we're off the junk. And so if you cross this again, we're just going to have to reduce your whole country to a cinder.
And we can, outsource a whole lot of manufacturing stuff to China to make the parts for the, Wait, that's not an improvement.
No, that's a lateral move, is what they call it.
Well, let's see. With all that's going on in Egypt, an 8-year-old girl in the Middle East has some advice for Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak.
Does she?
Her father videotaped the message, and her brother posted it on YouTube. It's now gaining traction. Little Juju says there's a simple solution to ending the violence in the country.
Her name is Juju?
Her name is Juju.
Okay. Hex was taken. Curse.
Little Juju.
All right. Let's see what little Juju has to say.
I would tell him...
It's going to be one of those things where I have to turn off the ticker thing because I can't understand what the hell she's saying. All right. Enunciate, please.
I would tell him to remove that law about letting him be the president forever.
Remove baklava about the thing.
Move the claw?
To let the people of Egypt vote. Because if you don't, they're just going to make problems for you, and it's going to be harder for you to rule your country, and they're going
to
be on
to woo TV your good chain.
Forever. I have
thanks,
no
Juju.
Idea what...
I appreciate that.
Well, that we're not done.
The mouths of babes, Don.
Juju also says, ostensibly, reportedly, that the violence could be ended if President Mubarak would let the people vote.
Okay, hold on.
And then they're going to just make huge problems, and then you're gonna waste all your money to fix all the hotels that they damage. And by the way, some of your police officers moved their jacket and they're joining the people.
Wouldn't it be great if she sounds a little creepy at the end. Wouldn't it be great if she ended with like, and then you will taste my steel? And then just sort of shook her fist.
I was hoping she'd just end with something. Oh, and by the way, I love Justin Bieber.
Or she, or if it ended with her just like crawling out of the screen with like,
yes,
you know, sort of stringy black hair everywhere.
All just wet and damp and dripping on your TV.
All right. Yeah. Well, there you go. So who can argue with whatever it is that whoever that was just said?
That was Juju.
That's right.
Thank you, Juju.
Authentic frontier gibberish.
An Oregon cattle rancher has died after some cows got loose in the parking lot of the Eugene Livestock Auction and one tossed him into the air. The Eugene Register Guard reports that longtime Lane County rancher Mervin McCarl landed headfirst on the pavement in Junction City. The owner of the weekly livestock auction, Bruce Anderson, called it a, quote, horrible, horrible accident.
Really?
Just sounds to me like the cows were just fed up.
I was going to say, do you think it's an accident from the cow's perspective?
Anderson said auction employees told him that three cows got loose as they were being loaded into a truck about 1:30 p.m. Saturday. McCarl, who was in his 70s, came over to help when one cow picked him up and tossed him into the air.
Yeah, that's not an accident. That's a premeditated act, or certainly an intentional act.
That's a cow saying no.
I've had enough. I don't want to be a belt.
He died Sunday.
Hey, by the way, let's not have any illusions about this. I'm wearing a leather belt right now. Had some leather shoes on this morning. Big carnivore. But I respect anybody who fights back. That's the thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, ultimately, I wish to prevail, but I respect anybody who struggles. So, and that includes cows, my bovine brethren.
It's like whenever there's an elephant that goes on a rampage at like a circus or something, I just always think, good for you, elephant.
Yeah. I mean, you know, at some point, there's got to be a victor in each of these contests, but I always root for the animal, you know, to at least make a little progress.
The tiger that is told just one time too many to, like, get up on its hind legs, and it just says, no, and then swipes at the guy's head, and now he has no face.
I would give anything if I could find that, like, series of, it wasn't even video, but it was like a, what do you call it? When the guy was taking photographs, but, like, sequentially, but it was like a series of photos taken over, like, a minute and a half. We've talked about this, and I've never been able to find the article again. It vanished somewhere. So this guy had some monkeys who were performing tricks for him in the streets of New Delhi or whatever.
I know exactly what you're talking about,
and the monkeys were like one time too many being hit with a stick, and it's like they just went after the guy like a velociraptor.
But they like took his stick away.
They took the stick and just started beating his ass with it while another one pulled his hair. It was so deeply satisfying to look at. It was I really felt like as one with the monkeys.
A series of small earthquakes near Mount St. Helens has drawn attention to the sleeping giant once again. Mount St. Helens, by the way, is a sleeping giant. I don't know if you knew that. The Pacific Northwest Seismic Network has recorded a total of 14 quakes since Thursday. Five of them struck that day, but none was stronger than a magnitude 1.8. Eight more quakes hit Saturday, including one that was magnitude 2.6. Most of the quakes happened about 6 miles north of the crater. The latest, a magnitude 2.2, happened about 12:40 a.m. Sunday. So on Friday, ostensibly, the volcano was at a normal level of seismicity.
This is one of those things where, given their path trajectory in terms of dealing with these things, this is about the time where they send a guy to stand like 10 feet away and stare at it for a while because he doesn't think anything's really going to happen.
Yeah, and then a week from now, the whole top's going to blow off again. They're going to go, we had no idea.
We couldn't have seen it coming. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. We're not really saying that it's going to explode a week from now. That's just a theory. We're just saying, like, in some, you know, it's possible. One never knows. Sleeping giant.
But if it does, remember where you heard it first.
That's right. We said that. We should make one huge prediction every day that probably won't happen. But then the one time it does, then just trumpet it, put out a huge press release about it. We should pick a celebrity and issue a thing every day saying that, like, he's going to die. And then eventually it will be true.
Yeah.
And we'll say that we predicted his death, like, that morning.
Well, every time somebody royal gets married, I always predict that their firstborn will be a two-headed lizard baby. And that generally does not happen, but I figure when it does, I will be the one who knew in advance.
Like picking a long-shot horse.
Yes.
It'd pay off in spades.
Exactly.
You're listening to Legion of Dudes. Don't forget, coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. It is the Rick Emerson Show. Encircling the globe, 147 countries receiving our wit by force, if necessary. That is coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com today. I don't even know how we're going to get all this done. Coming up next hour in the Rick Emerson program, and when I say next hour, I mean it starts next hour. It just goes, like, forever. It really never ends. Penis Watch, Snuff Watch, Democracy in the March, Pop Culture Authority. Ah, today's Pop Culture Authority answers the question, what is up with that creature in the trash compactor of the Death Star?
Yes,
So that's an accurate way of describing it?
Yeah, the way I wrote it was, what was that creature in the Death Star trash compactor anyway? So, yes. Exactly.
So we got that next hour. That is Pop Culture Authority. What is up with the creature in the Death Star trash compactor? Also, Aaron Geek in the City Duran. We'll be here talking about Week in Geek. And Mr. Ryan White from the Oregonian will join us. Music editor Ryan White as we count down the top five most unintelligible hit songs. Those are the top five unintelligible hit songs.
And we'll find out what happened to your glasses.
Yes. It's not that interesting. I'm telling you right now. It's just... There's an interesting coda to the story. The story itself is not all that gripping. Here's Don Taylor.
Undercover investigators from New York were able to buy guns at an Arizona gun show despite admitting they probably couldn't pass background checks. New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg says federal lawmakers need to enact stricter gun control.
The one thing we ask in terms of a new law is that they close this gun show loophole and make gun shows comply with every other sale in this country.
It's interesting how when it's a law that they don't like, it's a loophole.
Yeah, gun shows are not a loophole.
It's just something you can do.
Yes, because it is legal to buy and sell guns as a private party.
That's like
from
saying,
another private party.
Right. It's like saying if you can go to the store and you can buy, you know, if I can go to the store and I can buy Oh Boy Oberto sausage, that's a loophole.
Yeah.
Because it's a thing I'm allowed to do. Really, when they say loophole, that just means something the government, that's a freedom the government wishes to take away from you.
And I'm really not sure. I'm assuming in Arizona, it's similar to how it is in Oregon. But if they bought guns from someone despite saying they might not be able to pass, you know, a background check, they didn't buy them from a licensed gun broker. Because at gun shows here in Oregon, there are licensed gun brokers who sell and buy and sell guns at gun shows. And they do background checks. They have the facilities.
They do the thing like right there?
Right there. They do background checks because it's the law. Now, if you are at the gun show and there's another guy at the gun show and he has a rifle that you like the looks of, you can say, is that for sale? And the guy goes, yeah, give me $200 for it. And yeah, and you can buy it.
I never thought about that.
Because it's a private party purchase.
So it's not like you're buying it from like a business. You're buying it from a guy.
Right.
And that's interesting.
And that's legal.
Okay, so this is the... So that is the... Oh, yeah, see,
and that's what they're calling a loophole, is that you can go to a gun show and you can find some other guy with a gun and you can buy it from him.
So the two consenting adults can engage in some sort of business transaction. That's
yes,
the loophole.
That's the loophole.
Which is, and you kind of have to go to gun shows because it's like you can't do it on like Craigslist and you can't do it on eBay because they don't want to be trafficking in guns or facilitating it or whatever. So you kind of have to go to a place where you're going to meet like-minded individuals, such as a gun show.
Yeah, and that's my husband has done that. And the thing is, you get a better price for it that way too, because if you go to a broker, they're of course going to give you a fair price for the gun, but they also are going to want to resell it.
Yeah.
So they're going to need to make a profit. So you're not going to get you'll actually be able to get a price if you sell it directly to another guy in a private party purchase. My husband's done that. He's gone to gun shows, took a rifle with him. A guy said, hey, you selling that? And he said, yeah. And he sold it to a guy.
Well, and also, like, you're an adult. And so if you have something, you ought to be able to buy it or sell it as you wish.
Yeah, you'd think. Bloomberg admits he was disappointed that President Obama didn't raise the issue of tighter gun control during his State of the Union address.
I thought that he missed an opportunity, but I was encouraged by the fact that some members of his staff, one to me the Saturday night, said that he is going to take it up separately.
Uh-huh. Yeah, any minute now he's going to get on TV and talk about guns, because that's always a winning strategy for Democrats.
Yeah. Speaking of guns, a 12-year-old Oregon City boy was rushed to the hospital Sunday night after he was accidentally shot in the head by a friend at a neighbor's house. Police believe the shooting was an accident and said the father of one of the boys had left two shotguns unsecured in the living room of his home after going duck hunting.
Well done.
Police believe the 13-year-old male who lives at the address was playing with the shotgun. The 13-year-old apparently shot his friend while trying to scare him with what he thought was an unloaded weapon.
To be fair, that part of the equation probably reached some degree of success.
Yeah, the boy, whose name was not released, was unconscious when emergency personnel arrived at their home. He was flown to OHSU for treatment. Lieutenant Jim Band with the Oregon City Police Department says, how do these two young teens end up with a gun in their hands, and how does one of them end up getting shot? That's what we're trying to figure out, he said. I don't think there's a lot of figuring out
No,
here.
It seems like that's a one-stage investigation process.
Yeah, it's that the father is a dimwit and should have his guns taken away from him and not allowed to have them anymore.
He shouldn't be allowed to have children
anymore.
He doesn't
understand basic gun safety.
Really?
Nor, apparently, has he schooled his 13-year-old son on the danger of a shotgun.
Well, and I mean...
Yeah, nor should he be breathing.
Also, he shouldn't be having kids.
Yeah.
I was going to say, well, these statements, I guess, can both be true. First of all, look, I don't know what goes on in that family or, like, what sort of edumacation everybody has. But it does seem like at 13, you have passed what the Catholic Church would call the age of reason. Mm-hmm. And you ought to be able to figure out, maybe you don't know the degree to which a shotgun's going to harm a guy, but you do know that it's going to harm, that you know that's the whole point of a gun. The whole point of a gun is to blow things into little pieces, sort of put holes in them. So it seems like the 13-year-old could probably figure out himself, this might end badly. That notwithstanding, of course, he is 13, so he's a minor. So dad ought to be not, what do you call it, leaving him just laying around the house?
Yeah.
So there you go. That. And so this is like the thing earlier we were saying that consenting adults ought to be able to trade guns or have guns or buy guns or whatever. These two stories, in my opinion, they're not in conflict with one another at all, because it ends up just being a sort of self-regulating system. Yeah, where, you know, it's like dumb families tend to burn themselves out after a generation or two.
Well, we were talking about Jesse Ventura last week, and I quoted that thing he said where he said, you can't legislate stupidity.
Yeah, no, there's no cure for that either, by the way. The only cure for stupidity is Darwin. And, you know, and that does take a while. It's not an instant cure.
The federal government is out with new dietary guidelines, including ones dealing with alcohol. Cheryl Achterberg of Ohio State University was on the committee that wrote the guidelines and says it's now recommended that women have only one alcoholic drink a day and that men have no more than two.
Now, is this that they should have one drink a day? Or is this to limit yourself to?
Apparently, you should limit yourself to only one a day.
Because that thing that was saying, there's that jazz about how if you drink red wine or something, it's good for your...
Yeah, supposedly, yeah, just one drink a day is actually supposed to be good for you.
All right, so this is...
We changed that recommendation.
Whoa, okay. All right, too loud.
Oh, she's shrill.
Someone is way too into her job. Okay, hold on a second. Let's just... Okay.
We changed that recommendation, quite frankly, because in the past, it was couched on a weekly basis, and people thought they could save their daily allotments and then take six or seven drinks at a time.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, wow.
I can have seven a week, so I'll just have them all on Saturday.
That is fantastic. I don't even know if that's true, but I hope that it is. And here's the thing, is it probably is. That's great. Well, you know, I'm supposed to take one of these Vicodin, twice a day, but you know what? I'm just going to wait until Sunday and take 15 of them.
I don't understand why my kidneys are melting.
Wow, I'm going to play that one more time.
We changed that recommendation, quite frankly, because in the past it was couched on a weekly basis and people thought they could save their daily allotments and then take six or seven drinks at a time.
It's not an Oregon Trail card, okay? You don't get to burn it all out at once if you want.
You know, the thing that I learn every day over and over that is reinforced from reading the news here at Legion of News is that people are dumbasses.
Yes, yes, they are.
Dear God, people are dumbasses.
Wow, fantastic.
Leaving their shotguns lying around and thinking that, you know, having seven drinks at once is healthy and... God.
Maybe this was the problem with the shotgun guy, you know? Maybe he was like, it's Sunday, where are my seven belts of booze?
Guidelines reduce the recommended daily salt intake for many Americans to about half a teaspoon a day.
That seems practical.
Achterberg says the guidelines are realistic.
Uh-huh.
It's just going to call for some different choices, wiser choices, looking at food packages more, asking questions even when you go to restaurants.
I think trying to avoid like salt and like processed crap to a great degree. It's like that thing that that some of us will do like once a year. We're like, I'm only going to buy American goods. No more Chinese-made products for me. And then you just realize the entire world is made in China. I mean, really, 98% of the things in this room probably came from China. I think that it's just like while you sleep, I think you're just injected, with sodium and sugar by some sort of, by some sort of horrible diet fairy that just appears.
My husband's company is based in Corvallis, and his boss is very much a, everything made in America kind of a guy. And every year at Christmas time, they give out these gifts to different dentists that they do business with. And he always makes sure that it's something that's made, in America, because none of that made in China. So this year, what they were going to do is they were going to get these like fleece blankets that came from Pendleton, Pendleton here in Pendleton,
right.
Oregon. The fleece blankets were made in China.
Wow. Really?
Yes.
Okay.
So
Every once in a while, I'll be like at a dollar store or something, and I'll always stop and I'll check out the, where there's always like a clock, and then the clock will have, you can see this, there's that, it's not Marshall's, but there was the greatest store at Lloyd Center, and they took it away, unfortunately. It wasn't like a dollar store, but it was somewhere between like a Marshall's and a Spencer's Gifts and like a dollar boutique, and it was all sort of merged into one glorious outlet for goods and services.
It was called Carnival of Crap.
It was like everything. The thing that I remember seeing there was a series of Scarface touch lamps, which was sort of...
Oh, wow.
It was like the touch lamp. It was classy, too, because it was brass, and then it had like the glass paneling, the sort of facets of glass around the top of it, put in with little screws. And that, it had the glass, sort of a shade. And that's how you knew that it was an upscale item. But every panel was like Tony Montana in a different state. It's like Tony Montana holding a gun, Tony Montana snorting cocaine, Tony Montana beating a prostitute. And then it just said Scarface with like one letter for each panel of it was like you would touch it. And I swear to God, I went into the store. I spent about 10 minutes walking around. I left the store. And when I walked in, there was a group of youths gathered around it, and they were just like touching the lamp over and over again because they couldn't quite get over how the fact that it worked and that it was a touch lamp and it had Scarface on it. It was like it was two things that they didn't, they could never have dreamed that even one of those things existed, but to see them both in one item. And then on the way out, different group of people, it's like a family, and they're just standing around like just touching the lamp because they're just so agog at the thing. But if you go to those places, there's always like a clock. And in the background, it'll be like a proud eagle, like the head of it. And the eagle always looks really pissed for some reason, like it just caught somebody stealing its eggs. The eagle always looks really angry, like it's looking for some eyes to peck out. And then in the front, like Dale Earnhardt, and then a flag sort of overlaying the whole
flag.
Thing. And all of those things. At one point, I was going to put together a website, like a People of Walmart thing. But it was just going to be like patriotic crap made in China, because it's all made in China. All of it. At one point, one of those stores, I actually found, it was, near 4th of July, a bin of, cheap-ass plastic, sort of, cellophane flags, all of them made in China. It was just the most glorious sight ever. Here is Don Taylor.
Let's do our science.
Here's your Science on the March for Monday, January 31st, 2011, brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more about them at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Here is Don Taylor.
Many people think that either their wallets or their... They think with either their wallets or their stomachs, which I don't believe that's true. People think with their brains. Taking advantage of that can be used to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. A tax on meat and milk would likely mean we'd buy less of the foods that contribute to climate change, according to a study published in the journal Climate Change.
Really? Because that's how that works for cigarettes and gas. People just don't buy those things at all anymore.
Right. Or junk food. Remember we were going to do the junk food tax?
Yeah. People also don't try to become wealthy because they'll have to pay more taxes.
This tax is not at all a matter of forcing people to become vegetarians, but merely moving towards a slightly more climate-smart diet, said one of the study's authors, who, of course, is from the University of Gothenburg, Sweden. Tacking about $82 onto the cost of beef for every ton of carbon dioxide equivalent would reduce Europe's beef consumption by 15%, according to the study. By taxing all meats and milk, Europe's greenhouse gas emissions would be reduced by about 7%. A ton of carbon dioxide equivalent is the amount of a greenhouse gas needed to equal the heat-trapping power of one ton of carbon dioxide. The greenhouse gas produced by cattle is methane, a gas 20 times more effective than carbon dioxide at trapping heat. Cows produce methane in their stomachs, and the gas exits the cow through both ends, mostly as belches, but some as flatulence.
It's not like I don't believe him because, here's the thing about the Swedish. is they seem really, really smart and really on top of things, but they just seem so insufferably smug at the same time. There's just something about the, because you know, you get the feeling they kind of lounge around all day in sort of like an immaculately white clothing.
Yeah.
This is like the entire place just looks like one ski lodge. When I picture Sweden, it's just a lot of guys sitting around a roaring fire with champagne flutes, like looking like they're about to go play doubles with Bjorn Borg or something, and that's it. And then saying snarky things about Americans.
They eat a lot of cheese and drive electric cars.
That's it.
Rick Emerson, why does Grand Theft Auto 4 protagonist Nico Bellic have a Wikipedia entry four times the length of acclaimed British novelist Pat Barker?
Because I don't know who Pat Barker is.
Well, there you go. That might have something to do with the fact that only 13% of the online encyclopedia's contributors are women, according to the New York Times.
Is Pat Barker, is that a, is it Patrick or Pat?
It just says Pat. I don't know who that is. So.
Okay.
I'm a bad woman, apparently.
And this is my fault because I'm a man. I guess. I'm lumped in with the knuckle-draggers that have...
No, I was just asking you because you were the person across the table from me. The Wikimedia Foundation discovered this surprising fact about a year ago.
Yes, it's shocking.
And has since vowed to increase the number of women contributors to 24% by 2015. The gender skew mostly manifests in terms of length of coverage. While some lonely contributor may be content to peck out a few paragraphs about teenage girls' friendship bracelets, entries for boys' toys like baseball cards drip with obsessive detail. The imbalance extends from the relatively inconsequential Sex and the City's entry is dwarfed by that of The Sopranos to the unsettling Mexican feminist writers can't compete with Wiki's coverage of The Simpsons minutia. Well, with more and more adults using Wikipedia as a primary reference, some worry a dictionary compiled primarily by mid-20s male computer nerds may not be ideal. But one avid female Wiki contributor says changing things now could prove tough. She says, the big problem is that the current Wikipedia community is what came about by letting things develop naturally. Trying to influence it in another direction is no longer the easiest path and requires conscious effort to change.
I don't mean to sound like a male jackass. But why is it somebody else's fault if women just can't be bothered to write? Like, you got a keyboard, sister. Get to work.
Yeah, I know.
Write some crap.
Yeah.
I mean, they're more than half the country, and I would imagine that women are... In the United States, let's say. I would imagine that women are somewhere... They are approaching half the online community. Because... And that's... Because you gotta figure that... That the places that are not, the places where people are not online, those are places that are classed by socioeconomic divisions. In other words, inner city people don't have internet access to the same degree that people in a thriving metropolis do. So the division just tends to be along economic lines as opposed to gender lines. So it seems like the online community is probably about 50-50 in the States. So, I mean,
Also,
get on it.
Also, this is similar to the discussion Fatboy Roberts and I were having on our show. He was having on his show, Curtin Fatboy, about the, they do geek trivia at Vendetta twice a month. And they got complaints that their questions weren't, they didn't have enough questions for geek girls.
Right.
And the thing is, it's like, I'm sorry, facts is facts.
Well,
If there's more information being typed into Wikipedia about The Sopranos than Sex and the City, okay, sure, that shows some kind of a gender bias, but that doesn't necessarily mean that,
I don't even know that it's a gender bias. I think it means that women and men both watch The Sopranos, but only women watch Sex and the City, by and large. I mean, there are exceptions.
Yeah. And that there are males are more likely to jump on and type stuff into Wikipedia. So what?
Yeah, I mean, really... It doesn't seem like this is what we ought to be spending our time on as a people, but what do I know?
And also, maybe what it really points out is that perhaps that you should look for other sources of information besides Wikipedia.
Yeah.
That it's not exactly, a flawless system of knowledge.
Have I ever sent you that article? There's this great piece that somebody did about the 10 most ridiculous edit wars currently happening on Wikipedia.
No.
It's fascinating. It's fascinating. I mean, it's just, and some of it is ludicrous. There's some that are, I guess, of, I don't know, negligible concern to me or like anybody, but I guess you could see in some bizarre world, like there's some edit war that went on for just months and months and months until somebody like stepped in and just sort of brought everything to a halt. And it was a thing about They were trying to, I guess they were trying to, there was some debate going on about the ethnic heritage of Freddie Mercury. And because it was all very much in dispute because he's from whatever, Zanzibar or some, is that a place or is that a candy bar?
That's a place.
Okay. But he's from there. But then he's like Zoroastrian or something. And then it's like his parents were, I don't know, his parents were like dropped off a gypsy wagon in Romania or something. There's some whole thing about like what ancestry he was. And like there was a bunch of different people all trying to like pull him apart like the garments of Christ. But then there was this other, the longest flame war or the longest edit war that was happening in Wikipedia was a debate about whether it was appropriate to have a picture of a spider on the entry for arachnophobia. Like on the page about fear of spiders, was it appropriate to have an image of a spider?
Because it might scare someone?
Because if you went there looking to deal with your own fear of spiders, yeah. And there's a, And so there was this huge debate about whether you could have a picture of a spider on the page about spider phobia. And it went on, I mean, for like a year, there was just this huge grudge match going on about it in the edit section, which was awesome.
Well, if you ever have any questions about whether or not these publicly, openly created wiki things are, you know, flawless or useful sources of information.
Of course they are, Don.
I just will encourage you to go to Conservapedia and look up anything, really. But also, Conservapedia, please check out the entry on Meerkat, which I wrote, and which is riddled with inaccuracies that only, like, one or two have ever been corrected
The,
like, 2 years that it's been on Conservapedia, including the fact that's on there that they use their hand-like paws to communicate with a form of sign language.
Conservatives don't lie to other conservatives,
Don. So homeschool kids, you know, good luck with your report on meerkats.
Awesome. Fantastic.
As you watch the Packers take on the Steelers at this year's Super Bowl, you might want to take some deep breaths and channel as much calmness as you can, especially if the game isn't going your way. The stress of rooting for the losing team, a new study finds, may substantially increase the chances that fans will die from heart attacks. Risks are most likely highest for people who already suffer from heart problems and are susceptible to cardiac events. But the findings point to one of the ways that emotional events can have serious impacts on our health. Robert Kloner, director of research at the Heart Institute of Good Samaritan Hospital in Los Angeles, says fans develop emotional ties to their teams. For especially avid fans, the team is a way, in a way becomes a part of their family. And when there's a loss in the family, there's emotional stress. Doctors have long known that these kinds of feelings can lead to cardiac distress in some people because high levels of stress often trigger a fight or flight response. Heart rate and blood pressure soar, increasing the heart's need for oxygen, while other physiological reactions limit the amount of oxygen that can get there. In a previous study, it was documented that a rise in heart-related deaths after the 1994 Northridge earthquake in Los Angeles. European studies have also shown a rise in cardiac events after World Cup soccer games, particularly among male fans.
I'm not trying to be snarky or whatever, because, you know, have at it. Whatever you enjoy, whatever makes you happy. I should point out at this juncture that Don Taylor and I are going to be guesting on today's episode of Fun Employment Radio at funemploymentradio.com with Greg Nibbler, Sarah X. Dillon.
Because they want us to talk about football.
Because they will be two things. A,
because we know so much about it.
We'll be talking about the big game, because that's coming up this weekend. And Greg and Sarah is somewhat of a sports enthusiast. Greg, very much so. And also because they're doing the new, you know, the show for Trailblazers. They're doing the Trailblazers.tv thing. So I'm not trying to snark. I'm just saying I'm glad that that sports mean like dick to me, because it's like I get so exercised and aggravated about tiny, tiny, unimportant minutia now. I mean, there's so many things that just make me so wildly angry, like beyond any and all rational reason, that I'm glad that I don't have like sports. It would just be too much. I would be dead.
Yeah, I was mad last night because there wasn't enough Ron Silver in the movie Time Cop.
Oh, no.
So sports would just kill me.
Never enough Ron Silver in anything,
no.
Done. Are we, is this the end of science?
That could be the end of science.
All
let's be done with science.
There you go. There's your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. By the way, if you heard the Friday's Rick Emerson show, after much promotion of this fact, you did in fact hear Joe Squires, who was a guest in the studio, talk about how he can stop a steam leak with a mattress and a belt, or perhaps with a more pliable member of the crew on board a nuclear submarine. Also, he referenced the Kobayashi Maru, which, you know, so, like, big ups to him for that. You can find out more about Squires Electric by calling that number, yes?
Also, he looks a little bit like kind of a slightly beefier Nathan Fillion.
Nathan Fillion, or that guy who was Kevin, the older brother on Wonder Years?
A little bit.
Wait, is Kevin the Fred Savage?
No, Kevin.
Kevin was the older brother.
Yeah. No, I think a little more Nathan Fillion, though.
I could see that. It's sort of like if he bulked up a little bit.
Yeah. He's got that nose and then that perfect flippy wavy hair.
He looks a little bit also like this is pointless because nobody knows. So it's just you and I just talking about something that nobody else can weigh in on. Anyway.
Well, if you do business with Squires Electric,
right,
you might get to see him.
See his bright, shining face on your front porch, coming to deal with your electrical wiring, your Ethernet wiring of any kind, because they can help you with the installation, the repair. And if you got an inspection for the city coming up, if you're a restaurant or any kind of business, you want to make sure you pass it so the man doesn't come back through and take even more of your cash the second time around, contact Squires Electric, and they'll give you a free estimate so you know about what you're going to pay. 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. They are the fine folks behind Science on the March here at Legion of News. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com featuring Penis Watch, Snuff Watch, Pop Culture Authority. Today we answer the question, what is up with that creature in the garbage compactor of the Death Star? And we also have another top five most unintelligible hit songs. I will be joined by Mr. Ryan White from the Oregonian for that. Here is Don Taylor.
Authorities have discovered that oil leaking from the grounded barge Davy Crockett on the Columbia River near Camas contains small amounts of the toxic compound PCB. The U.S. Coast Guard said the level of PCB present is not a public health risk, so, you know, don't be alarmed.
Was the oil was health food or something before? If you're just sort of covering everything with oil, it seems like that's... Why do they have to pile on like that? Why do they even have to tell us?
I don't know.
What is the point?
More than 50 workers from several agencies have been working since Thursday to clean up the spill from the 431-foot barge. The team includes members of the Washington Department of Ecology and the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. Curtis Peach with the Washington Department of Ecology says, "Every spill is important to us in the grand scheme of things. We have a posture of rapidly, aggressively, well-coordinated response posture."
Okay.
I'm going to say that again. We have a posture of rapidly, aggressively, well-coordinated response posture.
Nothing in that sentence is correct. He's using adverbs where he means to use adjectives, first of all.
Yeah.
Never mind.
He's not saying
anything. See, this is why I can't be a sports fan, because I'm just I'm going to ratchet it down a little bit. All right.
Crews have recovered about 1,200 gallons of oil so far and deployed 18,000 feet of sorbent boom around the
sorbent boom.
Around
sorbent
the barge.
Boom is people! I don't even know what it means. Doesn't matter.
Sorbent boom.
That's awesome. Would Monsieur like a little sorbent boom to take the meal off his palate?
I think that's why I'm going to name my next dog. Sorbent boom.
Good God almighty.
A 500-yard no-wake zone is in effect around the Davy Crockett to ensure the safety of the on-scene workers and to prevent further damage to the vessel. Boaters are asked to use caution near the area.
All right.
Oh, yeah, and avoid direct contact with any oily sheen you may encounter on the water.
Speaking of oily sheen, Don, no, I don't. I thought I had some sound bites from Charlie Sheen today, but I guess I don't. So he went into rehab, apparently.
Yeah.
Apparently they went and just dragged him off to, some hidey hole for,
he got 3 months. He got out of the hospital from his stomach pains.
Uh-huh.
And then went back into rehab.
Did you see the Joe Estevez news?
No.
Oh, it's awesome. So Joe Estevez, I should be waiting till next hour because I don't want to get onto a thing. But so Charlie Sheen off in rehab apparently for 90 days. And I guess Joe Estevez, who, by the way, if you haven't seen Joe Estevez, he starred in he's the star of such films as Soul Taker. I think he also does voiceovers for the NRA because his voice sounds exactly like Martin Sheen. But he volunteered his services on 2 1/2 Men. He sent out some press release saying, like, I, Joe Estevez, will be willing to step into the fray, step into the void, into the breach.
Because we'll know the difference, really.
Right.
One Estevez is as good as another.
God damn. Well, in any event. So Joe Estevez is creepy looking. He looks like a weird sort of Edward Gorey drawing of Martin Sheen. He looks all extra pointy and squinty.
He's like Martin Sheen playing a creepy mountain man.
That's exactly what he looks like.
Yeah.
So so he was nice enough to alert everybody to his availability.
Oh, that's swell. You know who I feel sorry for in all of this is a Ducky.
Why?
Because now, you know, he's got to work with Charlie Sheen.
Well, that's true, I guess. I mean, maybe not for the next 3 months or so. I don't even know if they're taping. Well, I guess they're not taping with Charlie Sheen right now. Are they going to do that thing where he's talking to them over the phone? So how's life at your mountain cabin where you're vacationing for no reason, or whatever?
Where's Uncle Charlie? Oh, he just went to the store to get some beer. While he's gone, though, your cousin Jim has come to see us.
It's like that whole... Wasn't there like a whole section of Three's Company episodes where like Chrissy was just on the phone? or whatever, because her manager was having some like big land war with ABC about how much to get paid. And so it was just like, so still in Nebraska. Well, OK, see you some other point.
And then nobody wanted to work with her, so they wouldn't be in the same room with her anyway. So, yes.
Yeah.
Let's do, speaking of which, let's do entertainment.
Here's your entertainment news for Monday at Legion of News.
Lord of the Rings director Sir Peter Jackson is in stable condition in the intensive care unit of Wellington Hospital after surgery for a perforated ulcer. His publicist said Monday that Jackson was doing well, would be in the hospital for at least a few more days. Doctors expect Jackson to make a full recovery.
A perforated ulcer sounds like a bad... That's a bad thing inside a bad thing.
I think that's... Honestly, I think that's exactly what it sounds like. I think you have... It's when you have an ulcer that's so bad it eats through the wall of your stomach.
Do not want.
No. He was admitted to the hospital on Wednesday after complaining of acute stomach pains. His illness has delayed the start of filming of The Hobbit, the two-part prequel to his Lord of the Rings trilogy. 39-year-old actor David Arquette has checked out of rehab. So, ladies.
It's like sort of a Morning Sam, Morning Ralph thing with him and Charlie Sheen.
He's very committed to his sobriety and is a changed person now because of his experience. See, somebody who supposedly knows something told Us Magazine.
Somebody just pressed a macro.
He realizes how out of control things got and doesn't want that to happen again.
Okay.
At what point does David Arquette realize things are out of control?
The bar must be just set. It was like Charlie Sheen. Well, I guess he didn't. I guess that was where somebody finally just came and like kicked down the door or whatever. But you're right. I mean, I don't care that much about it. Here's the thing. David Arquette to me is one of those guys like Matthew Lillard. I was absent that day when they handed out interest in those guys as actors. You know, I just don't care. I could not possibly care less about what happened. I don't dislike them as such. I just could not possibly care less about what happens in like Matthew Lillard's life. It matters to me not at all. Zero dick.
Matthew Lillard, is he someone who gets up to hijinks?
I don't know.
In a David Arquette, Andy Dick sort of a way.
Maybe.
I don't ever hear anything about Matthew Lillard.
I don't know. He's totally off my radar.
I bet he's just a very calm, professional, nice guy who doesn't do anything.
Who just makes...
Wacky. He's no Jeremy Piven.
No,
running around with the ladies and the blow
just
and such.
Just content to exploit that Wing Commander franchise.
Former Melrose Place actress Amy Locane, also star of Crybaby, pleaded not guilty to charges of aggravated manslaughter and assault by auto. The actress is accused of hitting a car driven by Fred Seaman on June 27th, and the accident claimed the life of his wife, Helene. Authorities arrested Locane and claimed she had alcohol in her breath. Her lawyer told the Star-Ledger of Newark, because...
Why would you go right to that newspaper?
They're the only ones that are covering the story. The Newark Star-Ledger, that his client, who's free on $50,000 bail, wants the indictment dismissed.
Get me the Newark Star-Ledger, stat!
The Tudors actor, Henry Cavill, has been cast in the new Superman movie as the Man of Steel. The 27-year-old will be next seen this fall in the movie Immortals. In the pantheon of superheroes, Superman is the most recognized and revered character of all time, said director Zack Snyder, and I am honored to be part of his return to the big screen. I also joined Warner Brothers Legendary and the producers in saying how excited we are about the casting of Henry. He is a perfect choice to don the cape and S-shield.
And there was a whole bunch of... Matt Drudge was trying to stir the cauldron a little bit this morning, a whole bunch of fabricated outrage about the fact that Superman is being played by somebody who's not an American, despite the fact that he's an alien. He's from another planet. There was all of this. There was like five headlines.
Why can't we give these parts to actual aliens?
I don't know, Don. He linked to like five different opinion pieces about how this is, this is part of an anti-American sentiment that is creeping through our... he's from another planet altogether.
There are actors from Krypton who can't get work. And we're giving this to an English guy?
Hey, here's a question. Are there... Now, this is a thing that I should know, but I don't because I'm dumb. Are there prominent superheroes that are not Americans? I know that sounds dumb, but Batman, American. Iron Man, American. Superman, American. The Hulk, American. I mean, in the canon, anyway.
I don't know.
Spider-Man, obviously.
If you go to the comic book shop in London, do you find a bunch of British superheroes? I have no idea.
I would imagine it's still largely American superheroes, because that's kind of our biggest export is culture.
Yeah.
But, I mean, really, I mean, it's like we don't make TVs or anything. Like, we can't make a car anybody wants to buy. So instead, we create fictitious things in blue jeans and sell them.
That's really weird. I mean, obviously in Japan, they have all of their manga and anime and their you know, guys. But yeah, no. I don't know, in Europe, are there German superheroes? I don't know.
I think they try to avoid saying things like superhero and Superman entertainment now.
Still too soon.
Yeah, I think so. No, I'm going to create a Superman. If you say you're going to create a Superman in Germany, they take you into a small room and they beat you for a long time.
Aaron Sorkin has received a pilot order from HBO for a show he's developing about the cable news business.
And who's going to be a consultant on that program?
I don't know who.
Mr. Keith Olbermann.
Good for him.
Yeah.
So is that one of the reasons he walked away from...
I don't know, but they've been saying for the longest time, I've got a little thing for Aaron Sorkin.
A man crush.
In an artistic sort of way. Yeah. I've been following this for a long time because... And I don't have any issue with, you know, people are saying that it's like a back to the well thing or whatever, but I think he does certain things really well. And what Aaron Sorkin does better than almost anyone working in contemporary screenwriting is to show the behind the scenes, the inner workings of organizations where you typically only see the facade. And the West Wing is no different. You typically just see the press secretary standing up there giving you the party line. You never see what goes on in the back room. Same thing with Sports Night. Same thing with Studio 60, which wasn't very good, but I liked what he was trying to do. I liked the concept of it. Same thing with Charlie Wilson's War, in a certain sense, with Social Network. It is the behind the scenes. It's what leads up to the public moments that everybody has seen.
The American President.
Exactly. So he's been trying to develop this for a long time. He wanted to do a show that was a behind the scenes of effectively Keith Olbermann's show of The Countdown. And so I don't think that's why Olbermann left, but I'm sure that the minute he left, they probably had a phone call into him like seconds later. So, and I'm glad that it's going to be on HBO because they were, you know, that's really where his stuff belongs anyway. It was sort of an accident that The West Wing ever worked on network television.
And honestly, you can say he's going back to the well, but I would rather see Aaron Sorkin go back to his well than see another goddamn lawyer's show from David E. Kelly.
Seriously. Well, and Aaron Sorkin's Back to the Well is still so much better than like 90% of the dreck you will ever see on television. There was, when Sports Night got canceled, there was some discussion about Showtime picking up Sports Night. And the only reason that didn't happen is because that's when Sorkin was getting off of crack and didn't feel like he was really going to be able to continue writing two different shows at the same time. I'm all agog about that.
That's all the entertainment.
There's your entertainment news for Monday, January 31st, 2011. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program coming up next hour, featuring Penis Watch, Snuff Watch, Democracy in the March. Week in Geek with Mr. Aaron Duran and Pop Culture Authority will answer the question, what is up with that creature in the garbage compactor of the Death Star? Also, we'll have the top five most unintelligible pop songs. And it's all coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com. So if when 1 p.m. comes, if you are if you're feeling sullen and forlorn,
a little blue
because you say, ah, there go my faithful compadres Don and Rick under the horizon, I will not see them again for 23 hours. How shall I make it through this long, torturous existential plague called life?
There's so much more.
That's right. It's the tip of the iceberg is really what this is. So you find out more at rickemersonshow.com. That is rickemersonshow.com. Here's Don Taylor.
With vending machine theft on the rise across the country, operators are outfitting their machines with electronic self-defense devices to clamp down on crime, according to the Wall Street Journal. While vending machine sales have dropped 10% over the past year, vendors say robberies have also cut into their profits. Theft rings have been reported in Georgia, South Carolina, Florida, Mississippi, and New York, and thieves in Arizona recently used welding torches and bolt cutters to dismantle machines. But with police usually unwilling to get involved, operators have started rigging machines with wireless devices to notify them about break-ins and pressing charges on employees who are pocketing goods. Vending theft consultant Mark Manny told the Wall Street Journal, my sense is that theft is on the rise as there are so many people in desperate times.
Did I hear the word clamp, though, somewhere early?
Yeah, so they're clamping down on it.
I thought they were actual clamping devices.
No, I was hoping it was going to be something that would, like give you an electrical
tase you.
Shock. It would tase you if you try to jam your hand in there and you haven't put any money in or something.
There was one of the greatest, it was like on Dateline or something, they were talking about, it was when the LoJack first came out, and they were talking about the LoJack and its impact on crime, because it was one of the few things that was actually shown to deter auto theft in cities. And they talked about like different car theft prevention devices around the world, and one of them was in like South America, and they could only demonstrate it using a mannequin. They showed this car that they had confiscated from a guy who had rigged his own like anti-theft thing for his car. And they said, the man had rigged up his car to do this. And they show like a long shot on TV of the camera or of the car. And then from out of the frame, you just see a mannequin thrown in to the shot, and it lands against the car, and then just jets of fire come from underneath the door, and the mannequin is immediately in flames. It was awesome.
Yeah, I saw a thing there about, like, I can't remember if he was a political guy, or he was, I think he was some drug kingpin or something like that, but he had spent like $1 million on to have his Mercedes custom outfitted in Africa, I believe. He was in an African country, and it was like not only bulletproof and like was the doors were armored and all that sort of thing, but yeah, there were flamethrowers that came out the sides.
Why not?
Just like, just in case anybody was coming at you.
Well, I mean, you know, really, it seems like that's it's like that's a thing where you really, at most, you ought to get like the Ed 209, you know, like you have 10 seconds to step back or whatever. And then at that point, it's like, that's on you, you know? That is that's a fool me twice kind of a thing then. With that, let's see, where's the thing that does the deal? There we go. Thank you.
That's it.
This has been another exciting installment of Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget, this program is available later on today via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. You can also get it on your mobile device at mobile.cascadia.fm. Legion of News comes to you each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa, and so forth. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program comes up next hour at rickemersonshow.com. That is rickemersonshow.com. Thank you for listening. Be safe. We will see you again tomorrow at noon for another exciting installment of Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Have a safe and satisfying Monday, won't you please?